What's going on, everybody? This is episode 51 of the ClapperCast. It's June 30th, 2020. I'm Burke.
And I'm Sean.
And to cap off June, let's give our Central Division MVPs for the 2019-2020 season, Sean. Let's dive in, I guess, sticking with our theme of alphabetical order. Let's start with the Chicago Blackhawks. Who did you have?
So I kind of struggled with this one, actually. I was struggling to find an actual MVP candidate on the team. Like, it's not that the team was particularly horrible Detroit level, but they weren't all that great either. So I ended up just defaulting to Patrick Kane, by virtue of him being the complete offensive force behind that team. He led the team in scoring with 84 points, pretty much double anybody who isn't named Taves. And he did end up averaging over 20 minutes of ice time per game, which signifies that he is still being used in situations more than just offensive zone and power play. And I was kind of weighing the difference between him and Kubalik, because Dominik Kubalik was quite impactful in his own right as well, and he ended up playing a little bit in more different situations than Kane. But no, Kane is where I ended up falling on. How about you?
I did the same, and I had Kubalik written down as my alternate choice as well. Yeah, Kane, 33 goals, 51 assists, 84 points. He had a 24-point lead on first in the team. Taves, and then Kubalik, I think, were second and third.
Correct.
Over a point per game, lots of points on the power play, two game-winning goals, one overtime goal. Yeah, lots of ice time. Kubalik, I was impressed with his goals all year. I had him in one of my pools. He was a really cheap pickup for me. I was really happy with him. I was really pulling for him the whole season. I was kind of surprised to see his total on ice per game was only 14.22. I thought he would have played a little bit more, but yeah, he was lighting it up goal wise. And he only had 8 power play points. So out of his total 46, that's pretty significant
That is actually
to get
impressive
a lot of even strength points.
for a young situational player like him to have that few power play points but still put up 30 goals and 46 points on the season is pretty impressive.
He's kind of the antithesis to Victor Olofsson, right? Like, he's got
Yeah, absolutely.
like the majority of his points even strength, not just a power play specialist shooter. I think he's going to be a really good player for Chicago. Kind of when Kane and Taves are, getting older, it's nice to see Chicago having, one of those dynamic forwards coming up in the ranks.
Yeah, and the nice thing about Kubalik this year too is that he was very versatile in the lineup. He didn't just play on one line with the same line mates all the time. He was able to jump up and down depending on who needed him. So that's kind of a good sign as well that he's going to be a more adaptable player for them to kind of use in various situations.
Yeah, so again, kind of Patty Kane by default. He's kind of the de facto MVP for that team because he is, as you said, kind of the offensive. He is the offense. Someone scores, he's probably, got a hand in there somewhere. So, Patty Kane. Next up here, Colorado. I think everyone will probably know what the choice is here. No surprise, I chose the Nate Dog, Nate MacKinnon. We talked about him in our Hart Trophy candidate podcast. 93 points, 69 games. I mean, do we really have to say anything else here? We mentioned it before, but it's still remarkable. He had a 43-point lead for point totals on his team. The next highest was Cale Makar at 50 points. That's just insane. Like, 43 points would be a good season for an NHLer. And MacKinnon had that big of a gap
Yeah,
on his
43
the
points
next
is a
closest
respectable
teammate.
second line forward.
Yeah.
Like,
So, I'm assuming you picked Nathan MacKinnon as well.
I
Is
did,
that
yeah.
right?
I mean, Nathan MacKinnon, he's basically dragged the team on their own stretchers behind him the entire season. His main line mates, Landeskog and Rantanen, missed relatively significant time, 15, 20 games each, and he still managed to put up 93 points on the year. So yeah. Also shout out, honorable mention, to the team's medical staff for managing to still ice a team that's like half in body cast the entire time.
Absolutely. One McKinnon stat that I noticed here that I thought was pretty funny was that he led the team in shots and he had 318.
No, he actually led the league in shots.
And
yeah, I went and checked that.
The next closest on the Avalanche was Gabe Landeskog with 145.
Wow. Yeah, that's actually okay. I think we can determine what Colorado's offense strategy is. It's just okay. Give McKinnon the puck.
Give McKinnon the puck and let him shoot.
That's it.
That is the play.
He was on pace to hit 100 points for the first time in his career as well this season. He maxed out at 99 last year, but he had 13 games left to get another 7 points. I think he would have done that.
Yeah, I think so too. He probably would have done it in one more game.
To be honest, that wouldn't be out of question.
Yeah, the Nate Dogg, definitely the MVP there. Nobody even came close.
No. Because of that, though, I do want to give one honorable mention to just because there's other players on the team who helped out this season and point out Pavel Francouz. How he kind of jumped in from that unknown backup role and he ended up playing 34 games, 21-7-4 record, like .923 save percentage, 2.41 goals against average. He ended up being sixth in the league in goals saved above average with 13.06. So the team was quite injured in front of him and he kind of jumped in and played well above his weight class early on in his career he's 29, but early on in his NHL career to help Colorado get through a difficult season and succeed as well as they had.
Yeah, he had a really good stretch there when Grubauer was out. He's a right-handed catching goalie, isn't that right?
I believe that is.
Yeah, one of the rare right glove goalies. It's definitely kind of a weird thing. He had a good stretch there where he bailed the team out a lot.
Earned himself a contract as well.
Yeah. Move on here to the Dallas Stars. Who did you have?
So, in Dallas, we kind of know the offense has been a bit horseshit lately. But one thing on the team that is not actually horseshit is the goaltending duo of Ben Bishop and Anton Khudobin. So, I mean, Dallas, they've got Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, Alexander Radulov, John Klingberg, Joe Pavelski. Their leading scorer had 50 points in 69 games. And a main reason why they were actually able to still win games with that little offense is because of how good those goalies are. Either one of them, Ben Bishop and Anton Khudobin, are probably the second best tandem in the league. I'd put them right behind Boston's pair. And they're both worthy of a team MVP award. I don't really know which one to give it to, because even though Bishop's the starter, he played more games, he has worse stats than Khudobin. And it's not like I couldn't really decide between the two, so I'm just going to give it to both of the goalies. Just it fits.
That's pretty funny because I literally have that too. I have the goaltending tandem of Ben Bishop and Anton Khudobin. So I got some stats here. So yeah, you mentioned Bishop's were a little bit worse, but he played more games. So Bishop,
I say worse, it's not like bad. Yeah. It's like it's just less good than Anton Khudobin.
Yeah, less, little less good.
Yeah.
He had 44 games played. He had 21 wins. He had a .920 save percentage, a 2.50 save percent or goals against, and two shutouts. Whereas Khudobin had 30 games played, he had a .930 save percentage and a 2.22 goals against. So that .930 was best in the league, and it's not one of those, oh, I played two games and had some really good games. It was a significant chunk of games, so. You know, that's respectable. For goals saved above average in the league, Khudobin was third and Bishop was fifth. So it's hard to break them up here. The goaltending tandem really did bail them out.
Big time.
It was funny when I looked at the stats for the Skaters, just how mediocre they were.
I know. Like, this is a team that surprising. For years was kind of like offensively strong and defensively goaltending weak. And then now it's like completely flipped over the course of the last two seasons where the offense is mellowed out big time, but the defense and specifically the goaltending have been carrying this team.
Absolutely. For a skater, I've got an honorable mention here to Miro Heiskanen. He had the most minutes on the team, highest total average played per night. He had 35 points, so he beat his last season by 2 points in less games. He had the highest point share for a skater on the team.
That's a lot for a really young defenseman.
So yeah,
I just thought that was very impressive for him.
It always is for a defenseman when they jump in and they play as big a role on a team as Heiskanen has. Like, he's already... Would you put him as their number one? Or is he probably maybe number two to Klingberg still?
I think he's probably number two, but I don't think that would last very long. I mean, we saw it from his very first shift.
Or even then, I mean... Heiskanen and Lindell, that must be... Or Heiskanen and Lindell both have more ice time per game than Klingberg, so I would even possibly say that Heiskanen is viewed as their number one.
Yeah, he's got the highest on the team, I think, for ice time. So he gets a lot of offensive zone starts, but he's going to be on that blue line for a while. I mean, you remember his first shift. Do you remember that video of just how he just skates so effortlessly up and down the ice? It's like, this guy looks like he's been in the league for 5 or 6 years, and he's so smooth.
Yeah. And for a defenseman in the modern NHL that's so fast-paced and dynamic, like, that's going to be huge, that he'll end up being a very, very good two-way defenseman, that he can just hop up in the rush, no questions asked, and just go create something.
For sure. Unless you have anything else to add here for Dallas, maybe we can move on to the Minnesota Wild. I struggled for this one. So you mentioned you struggled for Chicago. Minnesota was that one for me in the Central here. I was kind of torn between Ryan Suter and Kevin Fiala. So Suter, definitely that stable, dependable defenseman. Chewed up a lot of minutes per month per night, 24-38 to be exact. Second on the team in points, guess who's first? First on the team in points share by a very small margin. Again, guess who's second here? It's just kind of like the identity of that team. But Kevin Fiala definitely had a breakout offensive season. It seemed like he was on every highlight reel for a while there. He kind of exploded with a lot of goals. First on team in points, in case you couldn't make that out here. He had 23 goals, 31 assists, 54 points, 4 game-winning goals, and again, second on the team in point share. So it's kind of like the main defenseman and the main offensive player on the team. I couldn't really choose between them. I guess I would probably go with Fiala on that. He probably gets the slight edge on it for me, because Minnesota's definitely a team that struggles offensively, so it's kind of cool to see them have, you know, a young guy who's
pretty exciting,
underutilized a little bit in Nashville, and then comes to the team and can score.
Is
exciting.
Paul Fenton now a genius? I mean, this trade is actually working out better for Minnesota than it is for Nashville.
Yeah, Granlund's not really doing so hot in Nashville. So
granted, not many players did in Nashville this year, but
that's fair.
You know, it's fair. It's fair to evaluate a year later.
Yeah. So who did you have?
I ended up selecting Jared Spurgeon. Ooh. So my mind is like, the Wild no longer succeed on having a good goaltender. They used to be able to kind of ride Devan Dubnyk's amazing performance to success, but now they can't really do that. And they're also not an offensive force, as you talked about. So I ended up settling on Spurgeon, as that he is so much of the identity and the foundation of that blue line that is quite deep, very strong, and one of the main reasons the Wild had really any success this season. He ends up being a fairly decent contributor offensively. He got 32 points in 62 games. which is pretty good for a defenseman, especially one that's as defensively sound as him. And on that note, defensively, his presence is shown in just looking at the numbers that 5v5 even strength, the Wild have a goal differential of 53-39 with him on the ice, and they're pretty much even at 103-101 without him. So that's a pretty big swing there when he isn't on the ice. And his 57.7 expected goal share is pretty high in the league. I think it's top five in the league for defenseman regulars. So he kind of does that all. He has a positive impact wherever he is on the ice, and he ends up being very, very underrated because he's not like that flashy defenseman that's going to make, you know, highlight reel plays. He doesn't have maybe the same power on his shot or his playmaking abilities that Suter has. He doesn't get many of the highlight reels, but he's a very solid, strong, reliable defenseman. And he's going to be major part of kind of developing and pushing the new identity of the Wild if they can have success by utilizing their defense like that. He was also the only Minnesota Wild player this season who had a hat trick.
Oh, well, right there, that's your most valuable player.
Absolutely. You got to get the hockey buzzwords in here, and Jarrett Spurgeon, Hattie, MVP.
He's also not got a gigantic contract like Suter, so that
that
probably helps see him as a bit more of an MVP. How many years does Suter have left? Like five?
It feels like 50.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I think it's going down in annual AAV, but it's a big chunk of the pot.
I'm still like looking back to that when the Wild got Suter. Now, it's so long ago.
Those are different times. So yeah, Minnesota, I don't know, kind of.
He's left at $7.5 million AAV. He's 35.
That's pretty bad.
Well, and actually,
they can Spurgeon, do something in playoffs, I guess.
Spurgeon has one more year left at 5.1. He jumps up to 7.5 as well for 7 years.
Oh, okay. Well, then he does have the same contract.
Pretty much. Actually,
but he's younger.
$40,000 more.
Okay, well.
So that's going to take him until he's about 37 or 38, just depending on his birthday is.
Stop doing that, Minnesota.
31-year-old defenseman, well, bam, $7.5 million.
Well, maybe let's jump to the second half of that trade you mentioned. Let's go to Nashville, the Purds. I chose Roman Josi.
Was there any other option?
No, there was not.
No. Very
there
definitive. I like that.
I looked. There was no second choice at all.
I know they have Josi a guy who played 4 minutes for the team this season. He could have been him.
Yeah, it could have been Pekka Rinne's admirable trait of supporting UC Saros. I guess that could have been MVP. Him watching his job slip away from the bench.
Oof, savage.
To another Finnish goalie. That could have been maybe it. But no, Roman Josi, I mean, for the same reasons as John Carlson, I have in my notes here John Carlson light, just to make sure that people know he wasn't as dominant as John Carlson. 16 goals, 49 assists, 65 points, led the team as a defenseman. Anytime anyone does that, it's pretty impressive.
Led the team by 20 points as well, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, Philip Forsberg had only like 48 points or something. Yeah. Plus 22, almost a point per game, 25-47 average ice time per night. First on the team in point share by a really wide margin. UC Saros was second. So it was pretty obvious that Roman Josi was the MVP this season, I think. I'm guessing you picked the same guy.
I definitely did. I want to throw one more stat into here, that Nashville as a team has a -2 goal differential, but when Roman Yossi's on the ice, they are +29. which goes to show just how much of an impact this guy has on the team's play and how much the team struggled when he was not there.
If only he could play 60 minutes a night.
I mean, it seems to be pushing him up like 25 and a half minutes already. He's almost half the game.
That's a lot. They got to get him out there full time.
Yeah. Also, looking into Nashville this season, I just realized that Dan Hamhu still plays. I thought he had retired.
Yeah, I mean, how old is that guy? Like 38?
37, according to Hockey Reference.
Did he play a lot of games?
60.
Oh, wow.
I did not realize that.
A third pairing, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything else here to add for Nashville. It was
Nashville's pretty cut and dry.
Pretty cut and dry, yeah. It was Yossi or bust.
Pretty much.
All right, well, let's move on to the St. Louis Blues. Who did you have?
So David Perron this season stepped up big in Vladimir Tarasenko's absence. Perron's normally kind of a second-line guy, but after Tarasenko went down, Perron jumped up into that first-line role, and he absolutely killed it this season. He ended up putting up 25 goals and 60 points. He's on pace to approach, if not pass, his career highs of 28 goals and 66 points. He ends up being kind of one of those energy spark plug players on the ice, and that kind of helped propel St. Louis forward and help them succeed in their cup defense quest. One of the key stats that stands out for David Perron is that he had 9 game-winning goals this season.
Holy.
Which was very, very impressive. I think that about sums up for Perron. I mean,
that's pretty
stepped up in a big role, 9 game-winning goals, 60 points, 25 goals. Yeah. How about you? Who did you take?
I picked Alex Pietrangelo. I think he had a really great year. He's kind of cemented himself as one of the best defensemen in the league. He doesn't put up amazing points, but I mean, 52 points, that's pretty impressive.
Oh, that is way up there for a defenseman, yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's not insane, but anytime you reach 50, that's pretty good. And he's been consistently doing that as a defenseman. 16 goals, 36 assists, plus 11, 3 game-winning goals. So, I mean, it's not 9, but it's 3.
That is correct. It is not 9.
Yeah, so I just picked him for, like, the stability that he provides, and because he is a pending UFA at the end of the season. So,
and St. Louis does not really have the money to bring him back, I don't think. They're going to have to
dump off Alex Steen on somebody. I don't think that they're going to be able to do it.
And with the cap, the cap is staying flat over the next couple seasons here, so they're not going to get any extra leeway on it as well.
Yeah, they're going to have to find a way to offload Alex Steen and Jake Allen, I believe, in order to keep Pietrangelo. Mm-hmm. And those aren't very valuable assets that teams are going to want. So unless there's a team that is struggling to make the cap floor, but I don't think there really is. So Pietrangelo is going to be a hot commodity on the market, I think, if they can't get something done here.
It's not very often you get a player as high profile as him hit the free agent market.
No, they're usually
team captain, like top 5, top 10 defensemen in the league. That's going to be it's going to be pretty big.
Yeah, so I saw Perron. I think he was tied for the highest on the team points with
one shy of O'Reilly.
Okay. I'll just pick Pietrangelo because he's just that stable two-way D man you can count on. Team captain, shows up every night, leads the team. So pretty boring. I actually picked a lot of defensemen, I'm just realizing.
defensemen are good though.
Yeah. Yeah, they're hard
to
find.
It's more in depth than just the leading scorer. Yeah. And especially if you can have a defenseman end up leading or being an MVP or leading a team in scoring, it's like it's showing that's like more aspects of their game that are just that good, that important to the success of whoever they're playing for.
For sure. Let's move on here to the Winnipeg Jets. I determined that if your name is Connor on the Winnipeg Jets that you are a really important player to that team. So the first Connor I want to mention, and this is who I'm giving my pick to, is Connor Hellebuck. And he had an unreal season in terms of stats, and I think he was head and shoulders above the other Connor that I'll mention. So he was tied with Carey Price for most games played, 58. The team only played 71, so he played essentially every game.
Yeah, he was heading up for 10. Mid to high 60s in games played for a year. That's a lot.
Yeah, he had a busy year. He had league highs in shots, saves, and shutouts. So he had the most shots, the most saves, and the most shutouts in the entire league. In six shutouts, by the way. 31 wins. He was top 10 in save percentage with a 9.22. So we mentioned Ben Bishop had a 9.20. So eat that, Ben Bishop. and he had a league high in point share amongst goalies. So he was the best for the goalies in that advanced stat. He was the third highest in the league of all players. Only Pasta and Dry had higher point shares. I'm like pretty much a heart worthy season as a goalie. He was just he bailed the team out a lot. Gave up a lot of shots, but he saved. So we talked probably ad nauseum about how their defense was so crap.
Oh, we've been going on about this since before the season even started. That yeah, like I mean, the only way the Jets lost. Are going to be decent this season is if Hellebuck bounces back and has a good season, and he did exactly that.
Yeah, I mean they lost what four of their top six defensemen.
I believe so, and even I think they even lost like their seventh or eighth guy as well, someone who was regularly in but not like an official starter.
Yeah, I mean, let's see if we can recap. They lost Bufflin, they lost Trouba, they lost Chiarot, and there's some other people there. Ah, whatever. A lot of guys. And they replaced them with goaltending. Just rely on Connor Hellebuck, he'll bail you out. And it worked.
Tyler Myers.
Yeah,
I'm just
Tyler
going
Myers,
through last season's roster here.
Yeah.
And like Kulikov, Beaulieu. Or is Beaulieu still there?
Beaulieu's still there.
Still there.
I think Kulikov might be, or did he go to the KHL?
Or
yeah, either way, they lost
no,
a lot
he's
of
still
defensemen.
There. He's still there. Someone else I was thinking of.
I think he might have been hurt for a big chunk of the year, maybe. So yeah, Connor Hellebuck is definitely the MVP of the Winnipeg Jets. The only other person that came close, I thought, was Kyle Connor. He had 38 goals, 35 assists, 73 points, had a career high. He had 7 game-winning goals. So, again, not 9, but 7 is pretty significant.
Hey, you know what? It's when you like proportion them out or whatever, St. Louis is better than Winnipeg, so 7 could be about equal to 9 in terms of team success.
Hey, that's a good way to look at it, yeah. he was a big part of their offense, so Winnipeg Jets need to just acquire all the Connors. And they'll be just a dominant team, I think.
Well, of course, if they get Connor McDavid.
What is Connor McDavid's stats in Winnipeg? I wonder if there's like everyone named Connor just plays really well in Winnipag. Does just McDavid just light it up in Winnipeg?
Interesting. I could find that. It'd just take a few minutes.
Yeah. So who did you have for the Jets?
I had no question in my mind. It was absolutely Connor Hellebuck for exactly the same reasons you had outlined. Last year, he kind of struggled a bit, but the roster in front of him was strong enough to help keep the Jets to be a good team. And also, they had a better performance from Brossoit as their backup. But this year, like we said, lost all their defense. Brossoit wasn't as good, but Connor Hellebuck bounced back and basically carried that team into what could have been the playoffs, but what is for sure the play-in round. One stat that I think I also want to mention is his 22.4 goals saved above average, which was second in the league to Tuukka Rask and very close second. I think Rask was 22.5, and the next one below him was in the 17s or 18s. So that's pretty significant that he's up there with Rask is probably the likely Vezina winner because of team success. But Hellebuck is definitely a candidate for that, and like you said, a dark horse Hart candidate because of how important that he was to that roster and how many points he probably stole for them.
Yeah, for sure. Out of all of these guys that you picked, do you think any one of them stands out for Central Division MVP?
McKinnon, yeah. McKinnon, then Hellebuck, easily. Yeah. Ultimately, like the forwards, the offense is going to get the MVP over the defense, the goalies. But what McKinnon does and what he represents to that team is major, and he does it year in, year out. Hellebuck is still like a very close second in that regard because he kind of was the reason that team was as good as they were. He gave the skaters a little bit more leniency and coverage if they happen to make a mistake or get a bit weak defensively. But I think McKinnon gets it because of how much better he was than anybody else on that team and how he drug them through all of their injury troubles.
Yeah, they both got pretty good stories. You know, McKinnon with the offensive just powerhouse, and then Hellebuck being able to salvage that season without any defense. We mentioned it. We talked about that before the season started, but how is this team going to function? How are they going to win games?
Honestly, I kind of figured they'd tank. I didn't think they'd be horrible, but you need to have better defense than the Jets had on paper. But, you know, the defense was able to hold it together just enough that Hellebuck can save them.
Yeah, I mean, props to Neil Pionk.
Absolutely.
I think we kind of shit on him a little bit when we talked about that that trade, but he kind of developed into a pretty solid defenseman,
you know,
for them.
Yeah, props to him. Like, he came in and kind of grabbed a bigger role and succeeded. Like, he ended up playing 23 minutes a night, 45 points. Like, that's well beyond what I would have expected out of him.
Yeah, he took that power play spot too. He was a free pickup for me in my fantasy league because, I mean, who would have drafted Neil Pionk going into the season? And then he just played on that power play unit and started getting points. So I was like, oh, okay. I'll ride this, see where this goes. And I kept him all year. He was a really good defenseman for me. So, I mean, that pretty much wraps up our Central Division MVPs. Did you have anything else to add, Sean?
How about we spend a couple minutes talking about the draft lottery from last week? Because that seemed to, that ruffled some feathers.
Yeah.
I'm personally...
Way to go, placeholder team.
Yeah, I mean, and I was really hoping for Team F, but I guess I'll settle with Team E.
Team E. Yeah, rip the Detroit Red Wings. That fucking...
I think it's just a lesson. It's a lesson for people in how stats work. Because they see, like, oh, Detroit has, like, the highest chance of winning the first overall, but their most likely outcome is to finish, like, third or fourth. So they get there as their most likely outcome, and it's like, oh, why did that happen? That's kind of where they were supposed to end up.
Yeah, I mean, the placeholder teams had, like, a 20% chance of getting the first pick.
Exactly. Right? I mean, so... the one that won it had a 2.5% chance, but that's still 2.5%. You can still win it.
Yeah. Yeah, just collectively, they have the highest, if you count them as one, right? They had the highest percentage of winning it. It's not what a lot of fans wanted, but it's drama.
Oh, absolutely.
It's talked about.
It's drama. It seems to have annoyed a lot of people.
Yeah, what team is it going to be? Is it going to be the Penguins, the Oilers? Is it going to be... That would ruffle some feathers if it ended up being the Oilers. I know you probably don't want to see that happen because it means that the Oilers don't make it out of the play-in round. But
I mean, I'm not holding my hopes too high because I'm an Oilers fan and I've been subjected to like 12 years of garbage. So I'm not really hopeful of anything anymore.
I mean,
but
I guess that might not be true because you could still, like, I was reading this thing about the Rangers. They could win the cup and still get the first.
I think that was before the lottery happened, because I think the conditions for that to happen are unmeetable now because a placeholder team isn't in the second or third draft spot. It was something to do with like Toronto had to be able to win second or third.
Okay. All right. Well, but, then it might mean that you don't win. You don't get into playoffs. Yeah, I mean, LA did pretty well for themselves. They bumped up into what, third spot?
Second.
Wow.
I believe. Because I believe they're second because there's a lot of talk about Quinton Byfield being the consensus second, but everyone's unsure if LA is actually going to draft him because they apparently never really even interviewed him in the time that they did have to evaluate prospects. They didn't expect to draft as high as they did, and they were planning on taking Tim Stutzel. And that's still being considered that they will pass on Byfield and go with Stutzel in the second overall spot. So that'll be kind of interesting to kind of see how that plays out, especially because the draft is still so far away.
Yeah, I wonder if they trade down. If there's any interest in that. I don't know if there's that big of a difference between Stutzel and Byfield, but
I think the talk is that Byfield has a higher upside, but might take a year or two to be NHL ready. But Stutzel is the safer pick, but doesn't have quite as high upside.
As high as ceiling.
Yeah, something like that.
Ah, I see. So I mean, we don't know where Lafreniere will end up. We'll have to keep tabs on that, but way to go, placeholder team E.
Congrats.
You did it.
You done well.
I wonder if placeholder team E will have three first overalls in a row. And then fans could have something else to complain about besides the Oilers.
Can't wait for the next draft lottery change. Damn team E.
Yeah, maybe it's team Edmonton.
Oh, you make a good point.
That's what it is.
Team Edmonton. That makes sense. Okay, I'm on board.
Yeah, I mean Lafreniere gets some.
I like this chaos outcome.
Yeah. Is he a winger or a centerman?
Checking right now.
Winger.
I can't remember.
According to Wikipedia.
Because if he's a winger, that would be pretty insane for the Oilers.
I'll throw him on McDavid's wing, why not?
Yeah, position left wing. That's actually the one they need to.
Oh, well, there you go.
Okay, it's working out great. Hockey world, get ready for some chaos. Edmonton's getting Lafreniere here.
Honestly, I'd be okay with that. That'd be pretty awesome.
You know what? They actually need cheap scoring because the cap's not doing anything and Edmonton's already in cap trouble, so...
Yeah.
Anywho, on that positive note, I think that's pretty much everything we wanted to cover today, right?
Yeah, that about wraps things up for this week here on Clappercast. So if you want to keep up to date on any hockey news, trivia, and when we release our latest podcast, you can follow us on Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter and Facebook at Clappercast. Who do you think should win MVP of each team in the Central Division? Make sure you let us know on social media. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.